the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
On a Friday afternoon, and Vince, it's not snowing. Sports Talk, FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. A beautiful, though a bit chilly, Friday afternoon. We've got a lot coming your way. We're going to be joined by Al Brown to talk college basketball. We always love that segment with him. We've got some postgame comments from Kelly Harper. As the Lady Vols suffer another defeat and the turnovers once again cropped up. We'll have comments from Rick Barnes as he previews the Tennessee-Auburn game, which will be played at Auburn at noon. Tony Vitello, Tennessee baseball coach, Tennessee in the Round Rock tournament out in just outside of Austin, Texas. So we'll bring you some comments from him. We've also got a Tennessee basketball practice report from Eric Kane. All of that coming your way today. And we're also going to take a deep dive into some football projections. We'll also take a look at some of the storylines for the second half of the NBA. And the NFL CBA is the owners have passed it. It's in the table or the lap of the players. We'll see what direction they want to go. So all of that coming your way. We'll go ahead and get to our news and notes. Brought to you by Image Matters, technology you need, people you can trust. So the Lady Vols, they take on Arkansas. And once again, as they fall 83-75, turnovers were the problem. 23 turnovers led to 26 Arkansas points. Vince, it's hard to beat anybody when you do that.
It is, and this is nothing new for the Lady Vols. There, some games, they've limited them to some degree, and it hasn't been as outrageous as that, but that's just way too many. You can't win. Tennessee actually had more made field goals than Arkansas, and that's how you can lose a game with all those turnovers with that stat.
Here's another stat that you would look at and say, hey, Tennessee's in good shape. Rebounds, Tennessee, 46-31. Points in the paint, 42-18. And yet they just couldn't overcome the turnovers. Also, Arkansas made 11 threes. They didn't shoot a great percentage. I think they were 11 of 29, but they made 11 threes. Tennessee was 5 of 17. So Ray Burrell had 21 points. She had all but two of those in the second half. She also had 9 rebounds, 3 assists, 5 turnovers. Renee Davis with 18 points, 8 rebounds. That is her 21st game with at least 15 points. That's pretty consistent. Jordan Horston had 9.6 rebounds, 4 assists. That looks good until you get to the 5 turnovers. She's now had 5 games in a row with at least 5 turnovers. She's had 19 games this year with at least 4 turnovers. And then for Arkansas, Amber Ramirez, 29 points. I think that's a career high. So Arkansas knocks off Tennessee. Tennessee's now lost 5 in a row. 5 in a row. They set a record last year when they lost 6 consecutive SEC games. They should be able to snap that. And, in fact, they should finish with a 3-game winning streak in SEC play. They host Vanderbilt, which is 3-10 in the SEC. They host Ole Miss, which is 0-13. They go to Auburn, which is 3-10. The last 3 SEC opponents for Tennessee are a combined 6-33 in SEC play.
Jimmy, I know this team plays harder for Kelly Harper than they appear to the last few years under Holly Warlick. And I think overall they are better, but I'm not assuming wins over any of those last 3 teams. I don't care what the records are, because now they're coming off of a 5-game losing streak. And they, in some areas like the turnovers, they really haven't improved. So they should, but I'm not. And that's what you said. I know that's what you said. You said they should. But I don't think it's as assumed as when they took care of business to get off to that 7-1 start, which at the time, midway through the conference play, that equaled their win total of 7 from all of last season. It looked really encouraging for them. I want to see them take care of business against that lesser competition before you start to be confident and they can get wins in those last 2 after that.
Yeah, the key words were they should, and the other key word was can't assume.
Right.
So, yeah, I agree with you, but they should win those last 3. If they do, that gets them to 20 wins. Their RPI dropped to 56, and so that does not put you in very good position in terms of the NCAA tournament. In fact, it probably puts you right on the bubble. So we'll see what happens there. And of course, Tennessee taking on Auburn tomorrow. Auburn was 4 of 24 on three-pointers against Georgia. Auburn's lost two in a row. They lost to Missouri in the game before that. They've been horrific from three-point range the last two games. But going home, I got a feeling they're going to shoot a whole lot better than that. And they also have guards that can penetrate. And Samir Dowdy, Javon McCormick, that's going to be a challenge for Tennessee to keep them in front of them. Tennessee, by the way, this year has two wins over ranked opponents. They're trying to get a third win. They also have a 28-23 edge in the series against Auburn. And Tennessee's won 11 of the last 15. But, boy, Bruce Pearl the last few years has had Tennessee's number. So we'll see if Tennessee can turn that around a little bit. In the SEC Swimming Championships in Auburn, boy, the Lady Vols are just tearing it up. Erica Brown set an American record in the 100 butterfly, the third fastest time ever, ever. It's her third straight 100 fly win in the SEC. So the Lady Vols also got a win from Tess Cephalia, and she won the gold in the 400 individual medley with the best time in the nation. So the Lady Vols have the lead going into today's competition, 632.5 points to Florida's 585.5, and the Vols are in fifth place with 422 points. We'll see how they fare today. Tennessee baseball at the Round Rock Classic. They face number one Texas Tech today. Saturday, they've got Houston at 3, Sunday, Stanford at noon. Tennessee has 45 runs scored in the first three games. They're averaging 13.3 a game. That's fourth in the nation. Team ERA of 1.25 is also fourth in the nation. They've only allowed 11 hits, but the competition was inferior, so Vince, you shouldn't get too attached to those numbers at this point.
No, and a lot of SEC teams really handle their competition in the first weekend of the year, minus Vanderbilt, who had Michigan and playing out in Arizona to start the season. So even with all the runs that they scored, they were still third, fourth, fifth in a lot of offensive categories. It's pretty ridiculous how good the SEC is. Much tougher competition. The interesting thing is will Garrett Crochet go this weekend? As cautious as it sounds like Tony Vitello wants to be with him, I would be a little bit surprised if we see him, but it just depends on how he feels. And in the projected starters for this weekend for the pitching rotations, Chad Dallas is listed for tonight against Texas Tech. Chase Wallace is listed for Houston, and then TBD against Stanford. The Sunday starter last week was Jackson Leith, another talented newcomer to the staff. So those are guys that if it is Dallas, Wallace, and Leith, all three of those guys pitched really well last weekend and would definitely earn a second opportunity. That's the way it looks like it'll go now, but you know, we'll see if we do see Crochet. Maybe they might want to bring Crochet back little by little. Maybe they can give him a little short little outing in relief, and then make sure if he is feeling good. So that's the biggest thing to look for, and then obviously the much tougher level of competition this weekend.
Tennessee softball team. So how about this? They open at Arizona, then they go to Mexico. Now they're going to Tampa. Well, they got it tough, don't they? they play in the South Florida Invitational. They played today against Florida International, Central Florida also today. Tomorrow they've got Central Florida in the morning. Then they'll play South Florida in the afternoon. They've got Sunday game at 11:30 against South Florida. Callie Turner leads the team with a 5-1 record, a .288 earned run average, as Ashley Rogers is still sidelined by a stress fracture. Amanda Ayala, hitting .458, leads the team in that category. Also, a couple of the notes. So Butch Jones has been promoted to special assistant to the head coach at Alabama. I don't know what his salary is. Did you see a number on that? Because as an analyst who's making $35,000. So at this point, Tennessee, and it's mitigated, but Tennessee at this point is still paying Jones a little bit over $200,000 a month. That'll go through February 28th of 2021. That total amounts to a little bit over $2.4 million is what they still owe Butch Jones. Now, if they bumped his salary there at Alabama, I don't know, to $100,000 or whatever he's making, that can be mitigated, but that's a drop in the bucket. Tennessee owed him, about $8.2 million when he was fired. So, anyway, there's kind of interest in that situation. Has Butch Jones tried to get another job? We've talked about this. He was said to be going to Maryland with Mike Locksley, and then, as I was told by sources, Maryland did a check on his background and found that he was alleged to have punched Matt Crowder. Maryland said, you can't bring him aboard, so he stayed at Alabama. Then he had a chance to get the Colorado State job. They did a search. They found some title line things they didn't like, so he didn't get the job there. I don't know how many jobs his name has been mentioned, but that would indicate he is making some type of an effort to get a job, because the language said if you don't make a concerted effort to find another job, then Tennessee can say, we're not paying you. But I think with him being in, having interviews, that would negate Tennessee's ability to recoup that money.
The gift that keeps on taking.
Yeah, good way to put it. All right, a couple of other notes. Three-point shooting in the NCAA. We thought that it would take a dip the first year that they instituted it. It's been worse than I thought. In Division I, three-point shooting, the average is 33.3%. Vince, that is the lowest since they instituted the three-point line in 1986-87. The wow. lowest since then. They moved the line back around 10, 11 years ago, and it didn't take that kind of a dip. Last year, let's see if I got this right. No, Maryland Eastern Shore has the worst three-point shooting percentage in the country at 24.9%. Last year's worst three-point shooting team shot 29.8, so a difference right at 5%. There are 25 teams this year that are lower than last year's worst shooting percentage. Virginia, which won the national championship last year, shooting 29.2% from three-point range. They shot 39.5% a year ago. And there's not much difference in the nation's leader. Stephon Gonzalez of UC Davis is shooting 49% from three. Last year's leader shot 49.7%. But there are 32 players that shot at least 40% last year. I'm sorry, this year. Last year there were 49. So 32 this year at 40% or better, 49 a year ago. Does that surprise you that the numbers are that far down?
Yes, because everyone you asked, especially coaches, I remember we asked Rick Barnes, and you know, I asked some assistant coaches, and everyone you heard discuss it thought it would go, it would be, the shooting percentage would be down initially, and then play would adjust, and then players would adjust to it. So yeah, to have it that down as significantly as it is. Now, did you say that the attempts, or did you look if the attempts are down?
Okay. It didn't address the attempts.
Okay.
I don't know what that
means. I would be curious to see if maybe, all right, percentages are down. We need to play a different way. And maybe the 3-point attempts overall in college basketball have gone down at all in adjustment to that. I know that's something that Tennessee has needed to do at times. They haven't shot a great percentage from three. You got to get to the basket and find other ways, the mid-range jump shot, things like that. By the way, real quick softball update from their games from today, yeah. Jimmy. Tennessee defeated Florida International 9-1 earlier today. Currently, in the bottom of the third, Tennessee trails UCF 10-0. So that's the action from today. And then Tennessee and Tennessee Tech and Round Rock will be at 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central Time.
Yeah, that may get run rule in the game they're playing right now, Lady Vols softball team. Southern Cal has dropped UC Davis from its football schedule, which is a FCS team. They're looking to try to schedule an FBS team. Now, I'm fine with that as long as that FBS team is a decent team. Don't go dropping an FCS team so you can play a 1-11 FBS team. Because to me, there's not a whole lot of difference in that. So, in fact, there are plenty of teams in the lower level that could beat the upper level's worst teams, like North Dakota State, for example, Georgia Southern in a given year. So I'll see what they do. I think it's interesting they've gone in that direction. I'm not married to the premise of not playing FCS. I think it depends on who you're playing.
Right.
If you play a pretty good FCS opponent, they could be better than an FBS team.
Well, here's what the SEC, the ACC, the Big Ten, what they do is the Big Ten not anymore, but they used to, is they'll play a newer FBS that basically is like an FCS. So they can say, oh, we're not playing FCS anymore, but they'll play someone that just moved up from the FCS to the FBS where they're basically the same level of team.
Georgia State?
Only it looks different. Although they've gotten good quick.
They did. They're in their 10th year.
Yeah.
They were horrible last year. Well, right. Okay. Let me define last year. 2018, the season before.
Right.
This year they made a bowl game.
Right.
They weren't a horrible team, but the year before, they weren't very good.
But if you're an FCS team, you really need to be elite, I think, to be similar to a bowl team in the FBS from the Group of Five or the Conference USA or Sun Belt, and maybe even some teams that don't make it to a bowl game. I think an elite FCS would you'd have to be it'd have to be a decent FBS to be close to an elite FCS. If it's just an 8-4 FCS, they're not going to be on the level of, you know, a bowl FBS, even if they're a newer FBS.
Maybe not, but I would rather I'd want to play an 8-4 if I'm going to go FCS. Let's take on an 8-4 team instead of a 2-10 one.
2-10 FBS?
No, 2-10 FCS.
Oh yeah.
Don't play one of those.
Right.
Yeah. And now the other argument is keep the money in state. Well, if you do that, then you might play an ETSU or a Tennessee Tech or UT Martin or Chattanooga that might be coming off a bad record.
And here's another thing. What do you get out of those games if you have zero to very little resistance? You know, I guess
you... Backups? You get to play backups?
Yeah, but are backups going to ultimately be the difference in you making it to a bowl game or not, or improving your record? I mean, for some, you want to learn about yourself, especially if you have a newer team, want to learn about yourself with some sort of challenge. There's a risk reward because you don't want to lose the game also, but I don't know. There's a lot of different ways that you can approach it. I just wish everybody would play tougher competition and overall.
You use the right word, tougher competition, because as we said, some FCS teams are pretty good, like North Dakota State went down to Kansas State and beat them.
Right, but not many people are scheduling those types of teams.
That's right. All right, a couple of notes. By the way, in a football note here, Marshall and East Carolina are playing each other August 29. What makes that interesting? They're having a tribute to the 75 that were killed in that plane crash at Marshall 50 years ago. So they're moving their kickoff as a tribute to that, and they're playing early in the season. All right, a couple other notes. If you think Tennessee's had trouble putting away games, check out Murray State. Murray State led Eastern Illinois 50-23 with 11:41 left. And lost 63-60. Eastern Illinois in the last 3:45 was 9 of 9 from the field. They hit a 3 to win the game. It's the fifth largest second half comeback in Division I history. The fifth largest. Pretty interesting note in regard to that. All right, and then just a couple other things. We'll touch on the NBA. Some of the storylines this year. Well, we'll talk about Joel Embiid. How about this? So he gets 39 points, 15 rebounds. Ben Simmons didn't play. And Philadelphia beats the Nets, rallying from a 20-point deficit to win in overtime. After the game, Embiid declares he's the best player in the world, and he's tired of making others feel comfortable on the court, which obviously many feel was a shot at Ben Simmons. So thank you, Joel Embiid, for helping out the 76ers.
play that way more than one game against the Nets. Yeah. He has the talent to be able to do that all the time, but we don't see that. Right. And to me, that's an excuse. I'm not going to focus on making everybody comfortable. Come on. If you already thought you were a superstar and the best player, you're telling me all this time you've been deferring? Really? You have been deferring? Not buying it.
One other note, as far as Trae Young, last night it became the fourth youngest player in NBA history to have a 50-point game as Atlanta beat the Heat 129-124. He also had 8 assists in that game. Only LeBron James, Devin Booker, and Brandon Jennings were younger when they scored 50 in an NBA game. In his last 5 home games, Young is averaging 43.2 points. I got to admit, he's been better than I thought he would be in the NBA.
He's been fantastic.
Yeah, he has been. Those are news and notes brought to you by Image Matters. When we come back, we'll take your phone call, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. With Vince Ferrar, I'm Jimmy Himes. You're listening to Sports Talk, 99.1 The Sports Animal.
99.1 The Sports Animal.
It sounds just as good on your car radio as it does while you're working.
99.1 The Sports Animal.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Helms along with Vince Ferrar. Let's go to the phones where Jim is our first caller. Hello, Jim.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Afternoon.
You know, the other day, I think it was Wednesday, you had Mike Barnett on, and he was talking about the Astros situation. And I was just amazed because he was getting into some really some real intricacies as far as how the scheme worked. And when he started getting into computers and algorithms, I went, my goodness. I mean, this was really an in-depth thing. You know, one of the questions I've got is almost a Dr. Phil type of question. You know, we've heard about the mechanics of the scheme and so forth. But, you know, as an athlete, as a competitor, I do wonder, do you really feel good about yourself, either if you've had a good day in July at the plate, you went 2-for-4, 3-for-4, or now you win the World Series, but do you really feel good about yourself knowing that you were part of, even if you decided not to take part in knowing the pitch that was coming, and but you still went along with it? Do you feel good about the accomplishments? Do you feel good about the achievement?
If you have a conscience, you do not. But if you have a conscience, you don't do it. So yep. I'm going to say those players felt very good about winning the World Series. I watched them celebrate. Heck, I celebrated with them. But yep. I watched them celebrate. There was great joy. And by the way, if I remember right, they won it on the road, didn't they? Charlie Morton was pitching on the road against the Dodgers when they won it.
I think so.
So, yeah, there was great jubilation when they did it. But if you don't care, if you don't have morals about it, certainly you feel good about it. And if you do have morals, you don't do it in the first place. So I'm going to say, yes, they delighted in the victory. And they also cashed in with their new contracts, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I don't think there was a lot of remorse about that, Vince. What do you think?
No, and I think there might be a sort of a way that they talked themselves into, we're doing this, but this is not the reason why we're successful.
We outsmarted them.
Because they had to execute after that. Look at the way they defended themselves since then, since they were punished by Major League Baseball. It's been, well, this didn't win us. It wasn't because of this. And we still have great players, a lot of talented guys. They were in that defense mode. So I wonder if that's a way that they talked themselves into during the process of believing, yet we're doing this, but this is still not the reason why we're winning. Therefore, they found it okay to celebrate despite that.
What I wonder also is that Correa said that Altuve didn't go along with it, that he did not cheat, where others said that he robbed Judge of the MVP award. So, who knows? I don't know everything about it. And I'll admit, I haven't read that much response from Houston. Vince, obviously, you know more about that than I do, because I don't know what all they said in their defense. I've kind of been out of pocket here a little bit. But
I want to throw out this last thing real quick, because I know you're up against the break. Houston certainly has tremendous players on the team, a lot of Hall of Fame potential players. Do you think this affects Hall of Fame voting in the future?
I'm going to say probably not. They only really prove 1 year of cheating, correct?
Yep. Yeah, I think so.
So I'm going to say probably not, but there's no guarantee. Maybe there would be some voters that would go back to one of my famous things. Who's not a first ballot Hall of Famer? There might be some that penalize him for a little while in regard to that. But if it's only 1 year out of, let's say Altuve wins a couple more MVP awards, I think it might be hard to keep him out.
Yeah.
But if all of a sudden they haven't, it was supposedly only 2017, right?
Right.
Primarily, they didn't have any proof beyond that.
Yeah, they're still, it's still kind of shady since then, because there is the whole buzzer thing that is still being disputed with Altuve in his jersey, and that was more recent.
The claim there was he had an unfinished tattoo and he didn't want his jersey ripped off.
Right. At first it was because his wife didn't, he didn't feel comfortable taking his shirt off, something about his wife, and then it was an unfinished tattoo, and You know, so that's still disputed. So I still think there's some gray area there in the last 2 years. But look, with writers for the Hall of Fame voting, people are going to take their stances. So, Jim, I'm going to say to some degree there will be an impact. Will it be like steroids where you're talking about an extended period of time in guys' career? Probably not to that extent. Yeah. But I bet some of them, the way they put their agenda into their voting, their personal agenda, I bet some are going to be like, nope, off the ballot.
That might be their way of punishing the players.
We're saying the same thing. I'm in essence, because mm-hmm. I'm saying I think there'll be some that say you're not getting in on the first ballot. I'm going to punish you for a year, maybe two. I don't know.
I think some may say nope, that you didn't get punished properly by Major League Baseball. I'm not putting you in. You're a cheater. How do I know you didn't cheat the rest of the years, even if it wasn't proven?
But I think there'll be a much, much, much smaller percentage of those versus steroids.
I agree with that. Yeah.
Well, guys, okay. I appreciate all the info. You guys have a great weekend.
Okay. You too, Jim. Thanks, appreciate Jim. It. Also, we want to mention to you, we have got some tickets available for the Lady Vols. So we want to make sure that you have an opportunity to get those tickets. And so if you are the fourth caller to 656 wins is going to get four tickets to this Sunday's Lady Vols game against Vanderbilt. Again, the fourth caller, 656 wins. This is Sports Talk on the Sports Animal. Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes with Vince Farrar. Do want to mention to you, we got the four pack of tickets to this Sunday's Lady Vols game against Vanderbilt. I should have clarified that you have to come by by 5:30. That's when our office is closed, and that's where the tickets are. If you can't make it by 5:30, then probably doesn't do you any help to call. But we're going to try it again. The fourth caller, 656 wins, will get four tickets to Sunday's Lady Vols Vanderbilt game, and you must be here at our offices by 5:30. To claim it. Let's go back to the phones where Roger's our next caller. Hello, Roger.
Hey, Jimmy, hey, Vince. How y'all doing?
Hey, we're doing fine, night. Roger. Thank you.
Good to hear from you, Roger. Thank you.
Oh, sure. No problem. Thank you. You talk to y'all. Jimmy, I know you've been off for a little while. Jimmy, did you have a good time off, Jimmy? Time off?
There are a lot of people think I've been off for a long time.
A while.
You know what I mean?
Even before vacation.
Before vacation, yeah. I had a wonderful time, one of the best trips I ever had. Played a lot of golf, went to Sedona, went to the Grand Canyon. It was a fantastic vacation. Thanks for asking.
Sure. It's good to have you back, me. I miss Jimmy. It's good to have you back, Jimmy.
Thank you.
And, sure, and I just want to ask you about the game tomorrow. I know it's played at Auburn tomorrow. I just want to ask you about the game tomorrow. Can Tennessee somehow beat Auburn tomorrow? I know it's tough, but I know that Auburn been kind of struggling lately. I just want to ask you how you think Tennessee's gonna do tomorrow.
There are a couple of keys to me. One. Isaac Okoro, the outstanding freshman for Auburn, has been out with a hamstring injury. And what we're hearing is he is doubtful to play. If he doesn't play, that really increases Tennessee's chances of winning. Here's the other part of that, too. I think Tennessee has got to stop the dribble penetration by Auburn, because if you give that up, then not only are they good finishers around the rim, but if you have people that help on defense, they're going to kick it out for a wide-open three. There's no way in the world, in my opinion, they're going to go 4-for-24 from three-point range again like they did against Georgia. So I think the dribble penetration is a huge key for Tennessee in an attempt to beat Auburn. Vince, any other thoughts?
No, 100%. Those are the two things. Was Okoro status and the dribble drive. I interviewed E. Pons for the pregame player interview, and there's two things that stood out. One is how often he talked about them needing to be smarter. And then the other thing is the dribble penetration of Auburn. Yeah. When Auburn played Kentucky this year, which I think might have been their best overall game where they looked the most impressive, both teams were getting in the lane at will, and they were willing to do it. When Auburn drives, it can not only create Can they get to all the way to the rim, but they can create and kicking it out to their three-point shooters, as you mentioned. But then also they're able to pass it within the post and have their bigs get easy buckets. We saw it against Tennessee last year in the SEC championship game. And then you just think about going back to the regular season, the end of the regular season, the year before where Auburn kept Tennessee from winning also. So there's just, unfortunately, there's just a bad string against Auburn, and they should have a bounce back performances after two duds on the road that they've had the last two games. It's going to be tough, Roger, but those would be the two keys for me also.
And Vince, I don't think Tennessee is real good at stopping dribble penetration. I like Viscovi. I like most everything about him, except I don't think he's real good defensively in that regard. And he commits many turnovers. But I like a lot about him, but I don't think that's his strength. And then Bowden is probably their best perimeter defender.
Yes.
But he's not as good, I don't think, as what Lamonte Turner was.
Yeah, he was their best on-ball defender.
So I think stopping dribble drive against Auburn is going to be a big challenge for this team.
Right, I got you. And you think Tennessee got a chance to win tomorrow?
Yeah, if they do those two things, and I think Okora being out, likely being out, is a big part of that.
I got you. Have you heard what Auburn's favorite tomorrow?
I haven't looked at the line. I do not know. We can check that maybe during the break, but I do not know what the line is.
Yeah. I got you. I just want to ask you about Kobe. You think he's getting better as far as shooting the three ball? You think he's similar to that guy that played last year that got hurt, Turner?
Viscovi is the shooter quite that Turner was. I think they're different types of shooters. Turner was more of a scorer that had great ability from 3-point range, and you know it hit so many clutch shots. That's another thing that Turner did, Jimmy, is he could make a shot when the offense was stagnant. He had great timing that his clutch shots would suddenly get the offense going again when they'd be in a rut. And I don't know that Viscovi's threes and shot making has had that same kind of impact. Turner's were very timely and got them going over the last couple of years.
I would put Viscovi against Turner when Viscovi's open with his feet set as a 3-point shooter.
Right.
But when contested, no. Creating his own shot, no.
And Turner could make contested threes too.
Yes.
Some ill-advised that would go in also.
What are you doing shooting that? Oh, it went in. Never mind. Yeah. So, hey, Roger, we appreciate it. Thanks for the phone call. When we come back, we're going to hear from Kelly Harper after Tennessee lost at Arkansas last night. With Vince Ferrar, I'm Jimmy Himes. You're listening to Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Only one radio station makes your workday a little more manageable.
Only one station is 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes with Vince Ferrar. Let's hear now from Kelly Harper post-game. Tennessee losing to Arkansas. Turnovers once again, the major problem. With Mickey Dearstone, here is Kelly Harper.
We're joined now by the head coach of the Lady Vols, Kelly Harper, and it's time for the Kelly Harper Show. And Kelly, I like the effort of this basketball team. What were your thoughts on the game today?
Well, obviously we didn't get enough stops. You know, we were needing some back-to-back stops. Didn't love our, first half. I thought we, I didn't think we were tough enough in the first half. We got some balls knocked out of our hands. We, missed some layups, made too many turnovers. So didn't like that. Obviously, we came out and we had some fight left in us in that second half and got ourselves in within striking distance. But, you know, we were scoring enough. We just could not get the stops. We couldn't get a score and a stop and a score and a stop. So, you know, you put yourself in a hole, you've got to come up with back-to-back stops.
You were down early in the fourth quarter by 16, but were able to cut it down to 6 at 70-64. Then you had a steal and turned it back over before you ever got it into front court, and that seemed to kind of flip things a little bit for
right.
this team.
Right. You know, we had a few just negative stretches, you know, the one in the third that I think of. But, you know, obviously to be able to put yourself back in that, to cut it down to 6, you know, we had to really get after it to get ourselves there. And, you know, we don't foul that last one. We didn't need to foul that last possession. And we, you know, hold them. They scored 81. You can't let that team score 81, even though that is under their average right now.
You played different defenses. Most people thought, I mean, when you face a team and have a lot of three-point shooters, you stick with primarily man-to-man. But they ran the zone pretty well, and just occasionally somebody would get free from a three-point land.
Right. Well, yeah, I didn't we mixed it up a little bit in the first half. I didn't think our zone was as good in the first half. I don't know how many they scored on it, but they got some easy looks. So we modified our man a little bit at halftime and thought it helped us. And then they got some transition buckets, I thought, in that second half to start and really – kind of expanded that lead there because of that. And, you know, we mix it up man zone and trying to give them something different, give them a different look with some, you know, let our players try to run around and give ourselves an opportunity.
You know, it looked like in the first half, Kelly, that some of the breaks didn't go our way. They went Arkansas's way. And we got a little frustrated
Agreed. And, you know, it's something I talked about at halftime, you know, just playing through some adversity. When things don't go your way, when the ball bounces the other team's way, or, you know, when you don't get the 50-50 call, if that happens, you've got to be able to be okay with that and play through. And I thought we were frustrated and kind of got a little soft right there during those stretches. And so that's what – we didn't talk a whole lot of X's and O's at halftime. It was actually talking is not what happened, if you want to know the truth. But, you know, it was all intangibles and trying to get this team motivated and to come out and fight it, you know, against that adversity.
Well, they did that. They fought in the second half, and you have to be pleased with that.
Well, you know, yeah, they got themselves in, like I said earlier, in striking distance. And, you know, we made more plays in the second half. We put up a lot of points there. You know, this is not the pace that they're used to is not the pace that we are used to. And, you know, we couldn't, you know, just going back to that, getting a score and a stop, you got to back those up because both teams are scoring a truckload in that second half.
Kelly, what is it going to take, or what does it take to get a team to take advantage of when you have advantages like we have a lot of games this year in the post, and it doesn't seem like that we can take advantage of those advantages?
Well, we need what's happening. We have the advantage in the height, but I don't think we have the advantage physicality-wise. I think a lot of people are just being more physical than us. You'll see we rarely catch the ball with a foot in the paint. We're pushed out a lot. You know, we're not I think that's the area that we've got to have the growth, you know, the physicality piece. Because the height won't do anything if you can't get turned around, get yourself squared up, and find an opportunity to score.
Last couple of weeks, or the last 3 or 4 weeks, we've talked about trying to finish in the top four of the SEC to get that double bye. You're not going to do that without a miracle happening. How do you keep this team from letting up now that that goal is not attainable?
Well, you know, that's a foreign concept for me. You know, I think whenever I go out to play, or whenever we're coaching, I mean, we're playing to win, and I don't need any motivation. You know, I don't need a carrot dangled out there in front of me because I want to win so bad. And that's what, one, I hope that we have some players like that. I hope that we have that. Two, you're still playing for seeding. You know, you're still – and you're playing for your season. I mean, you've got to go out and play hard and find a way to win. And You know, hopefully they got more in them and don't have to have a carrot dangled for them.
All right, Kelly, thanks. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, head coach Kelly Harper, as they lose to Arkansas tonight, 83-75.
That's Kelly Harper with Mickey Dearstone. And just a quick note about that, Vince, we were talking off air. The Lady Vols against teams with an RPI between 1 and 50, they're 1 and 9. And teams in which they have an RPI of 51 and higher, they're 16 and 0.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Their strength of schedule in the SEC is 76. Their non-conference strength of schedule, 269. It's horrible.
And it's not typical of the Lady Vols program. For years, they would challenge themselves in pre-conference. And that's something that Kelly Harper noted towards the end of pre-conference play. Hey, you know, would you have liked to have been challenged more or had some tougher games? And she said, yeah, probably so. Some of the teams weren't as good as their name says they should have been on paper. And Notre Dame is a example of that. So, you know, a little bit of that is circumstance, but you know, I don't think there were enough challenges on the schedule in pre-conference, and you know, it looked like a schedule like a football team would do to try to get bowl eligible.
It's why before the year I said I thought the Lady Vols would win more games than the Vols, mm-hmm. because their schedule was so much easier. So
and they might.
Well, I think they will.
Okay.
I don't think there's a question, but I doubt it.
It's okay. No, Tennessee is much tougher, but they also have a couple, two, three more games.
Right.
The men.
Right. But the Lady Vols, I think, will win at least 20. I don't think the men will get there.
Okay. No, I agree with that, yeah. But I'm just saying it's still out there.
You're just being a contrarian.
I don't need to manufacture it with you and I, Jimmy. That happens naturally.
When we come back, we're going to talk about an event that we're very much involved with. And it's a tremendous event. It's Game On Against Cancer that benefits the Thompson Survivor Center. So we'll talk with a couple of folks about that when we come back. Sports Talk, FM 99.1, The Sports Animal.